Welcome to Flipping the Script. I'm Lindsay Cuiava, your host and the artistic director of Re Theater, an online theater and education consulting company. Each week, we bring you new episodes about the theater world and theater education in an effort to revolutionize the way that theater is seen at the school and community level and inspire you to make art that matters wherever you may be. Welcome back for another episode. Oh my gosh, you guys. So I just got back a few days ago now. So not just got back. But this last weekend, I was in Ohio for the Ohio State Thespian Festival. And I just have to give a huge shout out to everybody there. It was such a blast. I think all of us know that theater kids just have this incredible energy about them. And when I was there, I just couldn't help but get that like crazy feeling that you get when you were a theater kid where your body feels like it's buzzing and everything is so exciting and worth screaming and everything over. And it was seriously just an absolutely fantastic experience. And it was also the first time that I had the opportunity to see an all-state show at one of these state thespian conferences. And the kids put on a production of Carrie, which was outstanding. I've never seen Carrie. I've never listened to it. And I was pretty surprised at how great of a high school show it is if you live in a town that can get behind a little bit more heavy or dark subject material. The music is fantastic. The story itself is really interesting and I think fascinating for young people to play out. So shout out to everybody that was in the Ohio State All-State show. It was fantastic. And I got to meet a lot of really cool young artists and teachers. And I also got to meet two people that I've met through Instagram and have been following and connecting with. So shout out to Justin and Gina. It was fantastic. Fantastic to meet you guys, and I am just excited that Q1 is finally over, and I feel like my life is starting to settle back into place now after all the craziness of the last couple months. So this month at Re Theater, all we are talking about is show selection, because it's that time of year when everyone is starting to think about next year and what shows we should be doing. And I don't think that this comes as any surprise to anyone who is producing theater, especially at the high school level, that things are drastically changing around what is acceptable to put on stage, what students are able to or should be telling what stories, and things are just rapidly changing. And a lot of people think that things are getting a little too PC. I actually think that that's not true. I think that sometimes we go too far, especially if you looked at the LaGuardia High School, they, a couple months ago, banned the use of swastikas in their production of The Sound of Music. I think that is very different than an all-white production of Hairspray. But anyways, things are definitely changing around standards of which we produce work. And this month, that's what we're talking about. So if you follow me on Instagram or Facebook, which if you don't, you totally should, because I will be talking about it there all month. So we're talking about this idea. And this week, I'm super excited to have Chessa Bentoncourt come back for another episode. She was on our episode about intimacy directing, and which was a huge success. We got so much feedback on. So I'm glad she's coming back. She's going to be doing an episode all about understanding race and ethnicity in show selection. She's going to talk about an awesome system that she's created called the 20% rule, and going to just be challenging us educators and us theater makers to think differently about the stories that we tell on stage and how we go about selecting material. So I'm super excited that she is back. She is also going to be leading our online masterclass this month as well, which will be on Saturday, April 20th. If you are interested in finding out more information about that, you can go to our website at www.retheaterco.com, navigate under the educator section, and you'll find all the details about it. I really hope that you will join us, especially if you're an educator who feels stuck and not sure how to select material. Chessa's going to be going through the race and ethnicity aspect of it, but you also are going to be getting some material from me as well that goes through a dramaturgical approach that you can apply when selecting shows as well. So it's gonna be a lot of fun, but let's go ahead and get to today's episode.
Thanks for tuning in. I am Lindsay Cuiava, the host of Flipping the Script, a podcast about theater for educators and community theater makers. And today I am joined by Chessa Betancourt. And I'm so excited. Chessa is absolutely one of my favorite people. And she is like totally rad and a huge expert, I think. And it's taught me so much on the subject we're going to be talking about today, which is talking about this idea of the 20% rule. And this kind of like lives in the realm of understanding casting ethics around race and ethnicity. So just as a fair warning, if you're listening, there might be some times that you're like, ouch, that makes me upset, mm-hmm. or this is a frustrating topic, or I don't agree with people. I just ask you to come in with an open mind and know that this discussion is evolving and there's a lot of things happening. But I truly believe and want to welcome you to join us in 2019, where we are changing the standards around the stories that we put on stage and who tells those stories, and know that this is a place where we can all learn together. So with all that being said, Chessa, welcome.
Thank you.
Chessa, I am the worst at introducing people, as everybody listening knows this. can you explain a little bit about who you are, what you're doing? I mean, we've known each other for a few years now, working out in Seattle, but what are the cool, awesome things that you do?
Yeah. So I'm an actor by trade, but I also am a theater artist in a lot of different ways. I produce a storytelling event for female and genderqueer individuals. Wow. Really off to an amazing start.
It's great. We're
not used to being on a podcast.
We're going up from here.
Yeah. For female and genderqueer identifying individuals. And I also am a movement choreographer and an intimacy choreographer and a dancer. And I'm also a teaching artist, which is like the primary thing that I have known you through. Yes. And an educator, and do a lot of work with different populations and theater work with different populations. Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, you really do so much in the field and provide so much back to folks that are trying to learn through your teaching artistry. And I'm super excited to have you on today to be talking about this 20% rule, which is something that you introduced me to last summer.
Yeah, I actually made it up.
And you made it up, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Which I think when you said it was so brilliant, which is why I really want to talk about it today, because I think it clarifies and codifies so much of the confusion around race and ethnicity when it comes to show selection.
Definitely.
Which is, I mean, I am a huge dramaturg nerd and I love show selection. It's like my jam. Mm-hmm. And this rule totally changed how I talk about it with educators, the way that I approach it. So I'm really excited to dive into it. So why don't we actually just dive into it? So
great.
Talk to me about what is the 20% rule?
Yeah. So, the 20% rule, I was teaching a class, on show selection and casting ethics when it comes to race and gender.
Yeah.
And the 20% rule, I agree with you that it's sort of like, it's a really hard thing to like quantify, like when you're casting and you're trying to cast a certain demographic, it's sort of like a hard, like sort of like nebulous thing to navigate. And so I was trying to come up with something that is like finite and number based, to sort of address this particular issue. So the 20% rule is essentially, if you have a character in a show that needs to be a certain demographic,
mm-hmm.
And when I say demographic, I mean needs to be a certain race or gender, needs to be a certain like ability type.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I mean someone like if it potentially someone who is a character who's differently abled, who's in a wheelchair, or or who's deaf, or what have you. So if you have a character that has an identity that they have to be a part of,
mm-hmm.
Then the people auditioning, your students auditioning, 20% of those students should fit that character. So if you have one character that needs to be someone who's Hispanic or Latinx, then you need to have 20%. You need to have a fourth. you need to have a fourth of your students.
Or a fifth.
A fifth. Correct. Wow.
Sorry, we're actors. We're not mathematicians.
I'm trained in theater.
I mean, come on, right?
That's why I was 20%. What fraction is that? So a fifth of the students auditioning need to also be Latinx or Hispanic. And the goal of that rule mm-hmm. is essentially to avoid tokenizing. because a lot of times what happens is schools that are not particularly diverse, or even communities that are not super diverse, you know, they have one, you know, they have a character that needs to be Black because there's some sort of like racial dynamic in the school. And then they have one Black student audition. Right. And then they're like, cool, so this is the character you have to play, regardless of that student's range or what they want to play or what their audition was. It's to avoid putting students in those boxes. And it's also to avoid a discrepancy in how you're casting, because that also means that if that one character has to be Black, then you're defaulting to white for everyone else. So I think that, that's basically what the rule's purpose is.
Yeah.
Is to make sure that you are being equitable in the way that you're casting, and also that you're not limiting students based on their identity.
I love that. And so you touched a lot on, from a casting standpoint, do you have any thoughts on how does the 20% rule affect like the show selection process?
Yeah, for sure. So I think when you're selecting a show, a lot of times schools are just like, this is a show that I enjoy or like, or is very popular right now, or fits the fits like high schools can do, or like it's the one we can get the rights to.
Right.
When in reality, it's really important to know A, your community, but also your student base.
Totally.
When you're choosing that show. So if you know that you don't have a lot of, or if you know that like your entire theater department is built of mostly female identifying students.
Right.
Don't do Peter and the Starcatcher, which is like meant to be, you know, like 20 men and one woman.
Sure.
Or like make sure that you can do gender bending casting and make sure to intentionally cast mostly women in those roles. Or mostly women and non-binary individuals. Because it's important that you're serving your student base and your community.
Totally.
And you also don't want to be in a situation where you're needing to cast someone in a certain role who's not built for that role, or who maybe it's not quite an equitable choice to put them in that role. And that puts them in a situation where they're needing to play a culture or a race or a gender identity or an ability level that they maybe shouldn't be playing.
That is so important. I just want to pause on that because I think right now there's a lot of conversation about the difference between people are still using the term colorblind casting, which is very funny because I think, I mean, it's like everything, right? It starts at one level and it takes a while to trickle down. So like, I hear colorblind being thrown around all the time, like when I'm working with community theaters and schools, and I'm like,
for sure.
Oh, but like we're 10 years behind because that's actually not the term we're using anymore. We're using the term color conscious casting.
Yeah.
And I think when we're colorblind casting would be just right, like, anybody can play the role. It's fine.
Yeah.
And color conscious casting is being aware of who you're putting in that role and the story that they're inherently going to tell.
Absolutely.
And I think that this is really important. I want to hammer this home because I have been a director who has made this choice and it was stupid. I have been on a production team that has made a choice and it's stupid. And I've seen many shows that made this choice and it's stupid. That you do not get to just cast any student of color in a role, especially if it's a slave role in American history.
Totally.
That does not work. And that's just a broad example.
Right.
Of like, we don't just get to put people of color into a random role because they're a person of color and think that that works.
Or also, I think what I've seen too is when we say colorblind casting, biases inevitably or assumptions inevitably sort of bleed into that. Like I've seen productions where, you know, a student, we're using specifically race in a lot of these examples, but like a student of color or a person of color has been, they've sort of like cast them in the villain role, or like I saw a production of Big Fish where the only person of color in the show was the witch who had like a Cajun accent and everyone else was white. And she did beautifully and it was such a good, like the quality of the production was good, but I sort of clocked that there had been some sort of like, because it was quote unquote, like colorblind casting, they maybe weren't paying attention to the fact that they had just sort of put that person in that, in that role that was perpetuating negative or incorrect stereotypes or assumptions about that population of people.
That's so true. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I've come up against that too, where I was like, ah, is that the right person? Like, they're very good and they're very talented and they might maybe even be the best fit for the role, but what does that subconsciously tell the story of?
Right. I think especially against the fact that the rest of the cast wasn't people of color.
Yeah.
Because I think if the entire cast were people of color or a couple more,
yeah.
Like if the cast was a lot more diverse, it would sort of like not be like, cool, we've put this one person in this situation, you know?
Right.
But because of the stark contrast, it was like, there's clearly, it felt like it did an injustice to that person, even though she totally killed it, you know? Like, even though she was amazing and everyone else was amazing in their roles, it left me sort of feeling like, I wonder if that's the best way to do what you just did instead of putting her in a different role or casting more diversely for the rest of the cast.
Totally. And I think that also it's important to like put the like asterisk next to all of this that you will never make everybody happy as a director.
Right. that director might be like, yeah, I clocked that, but she was the best for it and everyone was the best for theirs and I don't care. I just have to like...
Or that director could also be like, wow, didn't even realize that.
Totally.
Shoot. And that's okay. And I think that that's like one of the great things as humans is when we're humble.
Yeah.
That we can be like, dang, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I also want to say in that example,
if
that actor was like, yeah, I clocked that. And I like made this conscious choice because I'm an adult.
Yeah.
And I wanted to play this role and I had a great time. I also don't have the right to be like,
no,
but you were being you know, like,
right.
If it has to do a lot with the individual person playing it. And so I walked away with sort of like a
not great weird feeling. Yeah.
But it also doesn't really matter how I feel at the end of the day. It matters how the actor playing her felt.
Very true. Very true. Which is so hard with this whole subject.
Right.
Because this is the thing. And then we're like, oh, but asterisk. Everybody is going to think differently.
Right, absolutely.
I think it all, we're going to take a break here in a second, but before we do, I also want to say, like, as we dive into this subject more, really the big takeaway as you're listening is, how can we just do better?
Yeah.
There is no, well, there are sometimes that there is right and wrong, right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't do blackface or we don't alter people to look like a race. That's how we did it back in the old days and not today.
For sure.
But it's all about how can we continue to do better and learn from our mistakes and take that graciously.
Right.
And because this is a tougher subject. So
yeah.
When we come back from the break, we're going to dive into applying the 20% rule a little bit more and looking at how this affects us as theater makers.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Great.
Thanks.
If you are loving Chessa and the awesome advice that she gives as much as I am, you guys, you totally need to check out her masterclass. It's going to be on April 20th. It starts at 11 a.m. Pacific or 2 p.m. Eastern. And it's going to be a fantastic deep dive into understanding how race and ethnicity affect the choices that we make when it comes to show selection. I don't need to tell you that things are changing drastically in the industry regarding who is able to tell what stories, what shows we select for our community, and you cannot afford to be making mistakes, and you can't afford to be just content with, well, that's how it was done when I first started teaching or when I was in school, because that's not the standard anymore. You can't risk your job. You can't risk putting your kids in a situation that makes them uncomfortable. So come and join us. It's going to be a totally inviting and chill class. We're not going to like put anybody on notice. We just want to talk about these topics and help you better understand how to select shows that really speak to your community and that represent your students. So like I said, the class is on April 20th, starts at 11 a.m. Pacific. You can find out more if you go to our website. It's all in the show notes if you want more details. But join us. And even if you can't join us live, still come to the class, like purchase the class, because you have the opportunity to submit questions ahead of time so that even if you're not there live, your questions still get answered by Chessa. It's going to be very informative. If you're going to attend one class for ReTheater this whole year, you should totally attend this one. So go to the show notes, go to our website, www.retheaterco.com, to find out more, and we will see you there.
Well, welcome back. So, before the break, like we said, we were talking about the 20% rule and what that is. And now I would love to just kind of dive into more applications of this 20% rule. Mm-hmm. So before we can even do that, though, I hear all the time from folks that, like teachers and community theater makers, that all of the conversations around race and all the sensitivity and all the change that's happening really doesn't affect them at that level because of just the differences in production and like who it's reaching. That really, that's like at a national level, but at a smaller level, at a community level, it's not as important. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it definitely is. I think that part of our jobs as educators is to prepare students for the real world, we are preparing them for what theater is like.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're inside of a classroom, that's different. If you're inside of a theater classroom and you're doing scene work, I think, yes, you should play as many different types of people as possible to experience that person's, to sort of like live in their shoes or whatever. You know, like I think if you're inside of a closed classroom where you're sort of just experimenting, I think absolutely you shouldn't be thinking about how it's going to, like, what implications you're going to make.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should be more about the experience.
Sure.
If you were doing a production where it's open to the public, where mm-hmm. people are coming, I think it's very important. I think partially because what we are learning about a lot of the biases that a lot of the inequities in casting, but also in general when it comes to gender, but specifically in this, we're talking a lot about more about race.
Yeah.
Those assumptions and those sort of like biases start from a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
So if you tell a white student that they have, you know, it's totally fine for them to play Simba in the musical The Lion King.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know, like, there's a lot of
stuff on
that because they're
not The Lion King. Yeah, there's many stuff about that show. But yeah,
but continue. Or you know, someone in something like The Color Purple.
Right.
Let's use that as an example because that's a more straightforward example. If you were telling a student that it's okay for them to play one of those characters, they will then carry that into their professional life, mm-hmm. and then they won't be able to advocate for equity and equality later.
Okay.
It does them a disservice because it creates an assumption and a socialization in them that is not beneficial to them or to people they might be the ally of.
Sure.
It also, if you cast, say a white girl as Mulan,
mm-hmm.
it then tells every Asian person or student that sees that production that that they can't play that role.
Mm.
Even roles that belong to them, in which there are, I couldn't even name you another Asian lead in a musical that's like meant to be an Asian woman.
Yeah.
It also tells them that not even the very, very few roles that are built for them are for them.
Mm.
When already there's like an imbalance.
Right.
Where there's a lot more traditionally white lead female roles than there are Asian female roles.
Right.
And so you're sort of contributing to marginalization in either direction.
Totally.
For a white student playing a role that they sort of, or you know, an able-bodied student playing someone in a wheelchair, male student playing someone who's non-binary, all of that stuff, any of that, for you, even if it's a student who is like maybe slightly less marginalized, you're doing a disservice to them and you're doing a disservice to people who are actually from that population who are going to see that production and then be further marginalized because of it.
Yeah.
So I do think it's almost more important at the education community level because you're also trying to educate as much as you're trying to put on a good show.
Yeah.
And so it's important to make sure that those students are aware of those dynamics from an early age
mm-hmm.
To make sure that you are properly educating them and providing right. them that information and letting them know that there are dynamics in the world that make it so that that they will be appropriating a culture or an identity if they step into those roles, and they will be denying someone else that role.
Yeah.
And also that someone who is marginalized who sees it.
Yeah.
You're teaching that student that it's going to be even harder for them to get even things that are built for them, of which there are very few.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, man, I've heard you say that, like, talk about that a couple times. And every time it just, like, makes me really sad because I was a part of a process that did that about, I don't know, like 8 or 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. I worked on a production of Miss Saigon, and we cast a white woman as Kim. Mm-hmm. Actually, I mean, we had 5 Asian actors come out for the show and like 50 white actors. And so
yeah.
everybody was white in the show, which is problematic in its sense, like, right, yeah. having them all. But the thing that, like, really made me think about that and feel even worse than I already did is that the woman that we cast as Gigi, which is this, like, there's only 3 women in the entire show that have solos. Kim mm-hmm. is the lead. Then there's Ellen, the somebody's wife. And then Gigi has a solo. And Gigi we cast her as an Asian woman. Mm. And we did not cast her as Kim. Mm. And thinking back now on what that said to that actress and what that said to our community. And we actually had a person that was in the show quit and throw a big fit. Mm. And at the time we were all like, oh my gosh, like, and I was part of this too, of like, that person's being unrealistic. Like, it doesn't matter race. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, now I know that that was a horrible decision that I made
and
it was a party to, but that's the part that makes me, the fact that we put a white woman in the main Asian lead and the Asian woman also in an Asian role, but the a very, very minor role in what that says.
Yeah. And what we hear a lot is like, well, shouldn't we cast the best person for the role?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that person's inherently not the best person for the role because...
Interesting.
Because they're not part of that identity. And I also, like, it's not, for me also, it's not about the storytelling. It's not about who could do it. It's about the inequities of casting. And it's about the inequities of there's far more characters who the default of for that character is white than there are who are people of color who are marginalized in a different way. And so it's not actually about who could play it.
No.
Because there's plenty of, like, white people who could do such a beautiful job at any of those roles.
Yeah.
But the fact is there's way more roles for them.
Right.
And so when you are, it's more about the inequities outside of the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about who could do it because there's, you know, like vastly talented people everywhere.
You could do an entire white production of Color Purple. I just use that example again.
And those people would probably perform it beautifully.
Right.
But not for them.
It's not for them.
And you're also denying, in that you're denying a cast of black people who also are already being denied roles because the default for so much of westernized theater, because westernized theater is inherently based in white supremacy. I know everyone's gonna like possibly tense up, and that's okay if you have in that, because we're all learning. But my personal belief is that Western theater has an inherent imbalance in that way.
Totally.
And so there's already, it's more about providing opportunity than it is about who could play it or who is best for the role, especially in educational context, but in basically all contexts.
Mm-hmm.
You're more trying to balance the imbalance that's existed forever.
Right.
Than you are casting who has the best voice.
Right.
That's not quite what this is about. And I know 20% can be high. And so 20% is the ideal.
Right.
But if you have, you know, chances are if you live in a certain area that the demographic is like primarily white, you might not have 20% of black students. But if you have, you know, like if you have like maybe like 12% to 20%, like you might still be able to do it. But 20% is the goal.
Sure. That's really, thank you for pointing that out.
Because, like, I know that that can seem really high.
Right.
But essentially you're trying to avoid pushing a certain student into a role just because of their identity.
Right.
And you also want to make sure that you are casting equitably. And so right. you want to make sure that you are inviting everyone to the table so that you can cast also, you know, those students of color in characters that are not like quote unquote meant to be a person of color. You know, you want right. to also make sure that you are diversely casting outside of that. And if you're inviting everyone in that way, if you're mm-hmm. thinking about, okay, I want 20% of these students at least to be non-white or not able-bodied or non-male, you know, like if I'm putting my mind to that,
yeah,
you'll sort of put more intentionality into your casting automatically. Right. And I know that like that number can be high for some communities.
Right.
And so I know that that's not always going to be your situation, but what you're trying to avoid is casting someone from a more or from a less marginalized population in a more marginalized role.
Right.
Like that's what you're trying to avoid, but you're also trying to avoid boxing in someone to right. that role just because of their identity.
Yeah. And I think these are all amazing points. And I think as we're going through, if anybody's listening and is like, because it's, first of all, just acknowledge that you're feeling and that there's lots of things to learn.
Yeah.
And it's okay. And this is a great space. I mean, with this, and Tessa also is one of our awesome instructors at Re Theater, the theater education and consulting company that I run, who talks a lot about this and creates spaces for educators to learn.
And I still, you know, like I still, even as I said, a lot of those things, I still stumble over a lot of that language and yeah. a lot of really being able to articulate it because it is super nuanced and it is very complicated. And I also, as someone who's Latinx but white passing, like I even also have, you know, that sort of like tug of war inside of myself as I try to articulate these things as someone who's not a person of color.
Sure.
So like, or as someone who's like cisgendered, which right. if you don't know what that means, it's CIS gendered. And you can look it up.
Yeah.
but yeah, like they're, you know, as we navigate these conversations, they're going to be clumsy. Like even we've had this conversation yeah. 1,000 times
right.
and we know about this a lot and we're still like the thing. Yeah. Like it's just bad.
It's okay.
You just shouldn't do it. Like it's very hard to articulate and it's very hard to wrap your head around. And so right. like be gentle with yourself as you're right. processing this, whoever you are.
Right.
Because I think it's hard for all of us despite whatever demographic we come from. This is a hard thing to tackle and it's going to be hard to achieve.
Right.
And doing better is a good thing.
Right.
Even if you haven't perfected it, the goal is perfect. The goal is 20%.
Right.
But we might shake out to less than that and better is good.
Right. Yeah. I think, and just kind of switching gears a little bit. So one of the things that, better is always good. And when we're looking at show selection in particular, because I want to talk about that a little bit now, one of the things that I always teach, that we teach at Re Theater, is it's not could you do that show, it's should you do that show.
Totally.
Is that the story that you should be telling?
Yeah.
And the number, one of the, like, there's a bunch of tests, and if you want to learn more about it, definitely go to our website, but there's a bunch of different questions you ask yourself, and one of them is, when you're selecting a show, you want to select a show that speaks to your community and that will help empower or bring your community together more.
Absolutely.
So I think things like, you just use that Color Purple again. Color Purple, if you're in a predominantly white community, that story is about the uprising and the like coming of age of a queer woman who comes from, is a descendant of slavery. Like,
right,
like how does that speak to you?
And also, you can't tell that story very well.
Yeah, you don't.
If you are not from any of those demographics, yeah. you as the director, you as the educator, and your students have no idea how to tell that story.
Right.
So, like, in some ways it is about storytelling.
Totally.
Because it's about your community and how they, and like, I think there's a way to educate your community about those experiences without having to clumsily, and also you're going to have to cast like some of your white students in there, which is automatically not telling the story correctly.
Totally so defeats the purpose.
Right. Like you're gonna have to not tell it well, which isn't beneficial to anyone.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's not beneficial to anybody. And I think that when we come up against that wall, what I hear a lot from teachers is one, well, then there are so many shows I can't do, which I just wanna say, okay, everybody, musical theater. We're talking musical theater pretty much only.
Yeah.
Because I'm musical theater.
But traditional theater,
too. Even traditional theater.
Absolutely.
Musical theater specifically has been 90 probably plus percent written by white men to be performed by white actors for white audiences. We are fine.
Yeah, there's you have so, enough stuff.
So many options, guys. So many. If you maybe can't do Hairspray, I'm sorry. If you maybe can't do, I don't know, Once on This Island, which I don't even know what that one, but there are a handful of shows. And if instead we look and are like, these shows are taking it, like, we can't do them, we can't do anything. Instead of saying, what story is going to resonate with my community is the much healthier way to look at it.
Yeah. I think also a lot of people are like, well, then they don't get exposed to that story.
Right.
I think there are different ways without putting a student in a situation where they have to, like, play that character or putting an audience in a position where you have to put that student in front of them and be like, this represents this person.
Right.
You can do a musical review where you can still talk about the music. You know, you can do a production of West Side Story where you talk about the racial and cultural dynamics of Hispanic communities in that time with your students. You know, you could do a musical review. You can do it in your classroom where you learn, the students still get to feel what it's like to sing those songs, and you talk about the historical implications, or you talk about whatever culture it's from.
Right.
You know, like, there are still ways. Or you do, like, a musical review of stuff from that discusses, like, queer identity in a bunch of different ways.
Right.
Do a musical review of that and then have, like, someone who's equipped to talk about it do a talk back with the community.
Right.
If you're looking to do the exposure thing.
Yeah.
Don't put your students in the position of playing roles that they're not. That they don't have the right to, frankly, and they're not equipped to play.
Right.
There's other ways to introduce those concepts to your community that are more intentional and are going to benefit everyone better.
Absolutely. Yeah, and on that note, so this just reminded me when you were saying about how to, like, accurately use this race and using it as an educational tool. I recently had to hold myself back, and I maybe shouldn't have, from commenting on a post that was about, like, if somebody should, it was about race, and it was a little bit of a gray area, and someone's like, it's okay, just use dramaturgy and create a lobby display that, like, explains the history and have your kids do research. And as a dramaturg who's, like, specializes in working with schools and community theaters, that is never okay. So when Chessa is
it's never, like, enough.
It's never enough. Like, when Chessa's talking about the idea of using performance opportunities, not storytelling. I think there's a big difference, right?
Absolutely.
Performance is
or learning the material, for sure.
That's different than, like, putting on a show and telling a story and also making money off of it. Not great.
Yeah.
There's a difference, and you cannot explain away, like, issues of race and ethnicity just by doing dramaturgy and say, oh, it's fine, the show is cool. No, you should be doing dramaturgy all the time.
Right.
And dramaturgy is important if you're going to do, like, a review
anything.
Of Latin history. Yeah, whatever. So that's fine, but please never use dramaturgy in the name of explaining away racism, because that is how dramaturgy has been used for so long.
Totally.
And we are trying to change that.
Right.
Because
it is something, it's not enough.
Right.
Like, yes, you are doing more than if you did nothing.
Right.
But it's also, you're sort of using it as a scapegoat to explain away the fact that you didn't do the work to get enough students from that demographic as part of your production.
Or that you just wanted to do the production
and you need and you wanted an excuse to do it. So you're like, it's okay, we have a dramaturgical display. It's not acceptable.
It's fine. Yeah. No. So yeah, I think please just don't do that. And, and the last thing, so this also is reminding me of things that I hear from teachers and community makers a lot. That, well, then fair is fair. If I can't cast a student, like, let's just use, like, Hairspray as an example. If I can't cast a white student as Seaweed in Hairspray, then there can't be a person of color who plays Liesl in The Sound of Music.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have always struggled to answer and defend this all the time.
Absolutely.
What is your answer?
My answer is the thing that I said a little bit earlier. There's a cat on my lap, for those of you who...
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Who's going to purr into the mic right now. My answer for that is the thing that I said before, is that it's actually not about the storytelling.
Mm.
It's about the inequities out of casting and of what is written. And so fair is fair is what we're talking about. Is like, it is actually not fair because there are more opportunities for anyone who's going to play Liesel. In general, there's more opportunities and there's better representation, more complex representation of that person's identity than there is of the guy playing Seaweed. So you're right. Fair is fair, but it's not fair to do that.
Got it.
Yeah. And it has to do with really deep, it has to do with privilege, right? It has to do with the inherent privilege that we're given by our society when we start our lives.
Yep.
And you're right. Fair is fair. But the reality is the guy that plays Seaweed is going to have less performance opportunities and is probably just as talented, if not more talented, than the girl who's playing Cecil. So you, or Liesel.
Liesel, yeah. Sorry.
One of them. So the reality is you are balancing the scales by saying to whoever wants to cast, you know, Seaweed as a non-Black person, you can't do that. You actually are participating in the idea that fair is fair, because you are actively working against the things that have made this industry unfair to marginalized people.
I see.
So you are actually, they're correct, fair is fair, but it's unfair to participate in that argument. Because it's not like an eye for an eye.
Right.
That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is, historically, there are less stories about marginalized people because that's what being marginalized means.
Yeah.
And marginalized people get cast less because they only get cast in stories about them instead of being cast, you know, like Cinderella. When we think of Cinderella, we default to thinking of her as a white woman, even though there's no reason why she needs to be.
And the Brandy version is way better. Let's all just,
God,
like,
that version
come
is
on.
So
come on.
Good. Right. And when you do Rodgers and Hammerstein Cinderella, like, technically the version everyone thinks of is the Brandy version,
right?
Which, like, historically that person. And there's no reason why she should be, but 95% of the women or people who have ever played Cinderella have been white. And so that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about like, okay, cool, well then the same standard should exist. We are talking about making it fair.
Right. Well, and that, like, that exact example of Cinderella. So if anybody's listening and is like, this is BS, like, you guys are overly sensitive, whatever. It's not true that white people get more audition opportunities. Guys, the Fifth Avenue Theater did a production of Little Mermaid out here, and they cast an Asian American woman as Ariel, and the amount of feedback that it was a co-pro, like, across the country for like a year it toured, the amount of feedback that every theater got, because how dare an Asian woman play Ariel,
even though, like, she's a fictional creature.
Right, like, this is real, like,
absolutely.
It exists, and I'm not...
And I can tell you that I spoke to a lot of those people because I was working in the box office at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
So the amount of phone calls we got that they were like, well, Ariel has to be white. And we were like, why? She lives in the ocean, and she's a mythical creature. Right. But it does exist. And also, take any random sample of plays or musicals and count how many people are historically white versus how many people...
Right.
Or even, like, count how many characters who you know what they do for a job, who have a complex story arc, who are only men.
Even.
You know?
Oh, gosh. Don't. Yeah, that's a
you
whole
know?
Other...
Like, lead characters who are only men. Count the number of female characters who have their own arc instead of their arc relates to how in love they are with the man or their a plot device.
Right.
I guarantee you will come up with the overwhelming percentage is beneficial of people who are white or people who are male or people who are cisgendered or people who are able-bodied.
Right.
You know, and even when we get into, like disability and those things, it's like...
It's a whole nother...
Can you even name me someone, you know, I think probably, who's the character from Wicked?
Oh, Effie? Or I don't remember
or the
name.
Yeah, there's
the
like...
The sister,
there,
right?
Yes, like,
well,
that's
what's
the
her
only...
Name?
Yeah, you don't even know her
crazy.
Name because she's not famous enough to be true. And so, like, I would encourage you before you say that inequity doesn't exist to do a little bit of research or to go to, like, five shows in a row and count how many people are part of a marginalized group versus how many people are part of a non-marginalized group, and how many characters you just associate with whiteness or with cisness or with, you know, being male or,
right.
or being, able-bodied, you know, like count how many people you just sort of like when you think of Cinderella, when you think of Little Mermaid,
right.
You know, like even, you know, Lion King is such a big argument because people are like, well, the people that played those characters in the Disney version was like Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Right.
You're like, yeah, but they were in Africa. How did Jonathan Taylor Thomas get there? You know, like, even though those are animals.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's like a magical world where animals can talk. Like, think of what you think of as the default.
Yeah.
Because I guarantee you it will be 85% a certain demographic. And you will be not associating those roles. So we are participating with this practice. We are making fair is fair.
Yeah.
Because it's not and hasn't been historically for the entire time Western theater has existed.
Right. And this is, like we have said a million times, this is like a heavy topic.
Totally. And it's hard.
And it's hard.
For
like,
sure.
I remember the first time somebody told me, like, oh, do you know theater's super racist and super white supremacy? And I'm like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
I'm not a bad person.
It's magical and beautiful.
I don't make choices because I'm a racist. Like, I didn't cast a white person as Kim in Miss Saigon because I'm a racist.
Totally.
It was because I didn't know better. And that's not an excuse.
And you just weren't paying attention
but it wasn't,
to it.
Yeah. And I grew up, there was, like, no diversity.
Totally.
I had no idea. No idea. And so all we can do, like, the aim of this podcast specifically, but the podcast in general, is to just bring ideas and thoughts to the listeners to, like, think on, to ruminate on, and to maybe grow from. Like, we're not, like, I mean, Tessa and I probably have very strong, well, no, we have very strong beliefs on this subject, and there are things that we would not do, mm-hmm. and we as consultants would not advise you to do, but we're not saying that you can't do them. Like, you have your own autonomy, and you get to decide what you will do.
Yeah, and we're saying that there are certain things that you might do if you don't do what we advise. Like, as consultants, the point in consulting is to say, like, okay, you can do this, but know that you are maybe telling your students of color that they don't matter.
Right.
And you are maybe telling your white students that they have the right to, you know, African heritage or whatever, you know, or cultural practice.
Or let's just even be honest, like, you also are putting yourself in danger of losing your job.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're a community theater that's doing this, getting negative press.
Absolutely. Like, you are going to, whether or not your intentions were to oppress anyone, that is what it might seem like, and you will then be labeled that way.
And it's indefensible.
So if nothing else, it's a PR nightmare.
Right, yeah.
You should do it because it's what it means to be living in, like, an equitable and like, diverse and inclusive society.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you just might be labeled as someone who is racist or sexist or transphobic or whatever, if you participate in sort of reckless casting practice.
Right. And you just, like I always say, what small changes can you make to make your life easier, but also the people that you are creating art with's lives better?
Like, for sure.
This is a small thing that you can do. It's very small.
And if you just have the 20% rule in your head, it's a small thing to be like, okay, I'm really reaching for this number, which means that I will do more outreach to students who are part of this demographic, which means that I am being more inclusive and making sure they know that this theater is for them.
Yes.
And I might not get to 20%, right? Like, I might have 10% and still have to cast out of that and still maybe don't feel great about the way I've had to cast it. But I'm pushing for inclusivity. I'm
and
pushing
the future.
For equity.
Yeah. Like, think about, like, the future. How will that action change your program in the future for the better?
Yeah.
And I just encourage you to think about this. And one thing I want to just tag on quick with the 20% rule. So, like, how do you even identify that you have to have a person of color or a specific person playing a role?
Mm.
And one of the things that we always talk about is that if the character's main conflict revolves around their race, ethnicity, or gender, then it has to be. And that's, like, a really, like, easy way. If it revolves around, if the conflict is around their race, ethnicity, or gender, they have to be played by somebody. Or they should be played, because I'm not going to tell you how.
Yeah, but and I would say it's okay to use the language have to.
Okay, great. So yeah, have
because
to play. Yeah.
The people that won't do that, like,
aren't going to listen anyway. So.
Right, like, you know, like, I would say think of it as have to.
Yeah.
In reality, it might shake out to should, but right. think of it as have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's great, is if the main conflict, if there's a huge plot point around that fact, but also the script will imply. So if they yes. live in a certain area, if they have a certain dialect.
That's huge. Please do not have students using dialects on stage like that, like mimic another ethnicity or like it's different if you're like Absolutely. A white person having
a Scottish accent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Very different For than sure. you're like, I'm a white person doing an African accent. Please no.
Right. Yeah, like if there are any sort of cultural or racial or gender implications about mm-hmm. who that person is, and if those things are important.
Yeah.
Because in Shakespeare all the time we gender bend because we're right. like, it doesn't actually matter that this person is male. And that's a whole other,
yeah,
I think,
a podcast, whole other
podcast
is for sure.
like, you know, also making fair is fair and like creating equity means sometimes ignoring that something is historically played by a man and being like, cool, I'm gonna put a woman in that role.
Right.
I'm gonna put someone who's non-binary in that role. Which is like an important practice and also not totally what we're talking about. But also it will, you know, it will say in the script. And then everything else should be, am I being equitable?
Like, yes.
If you're like, cool, this person has to be white and this person has to be black because their whole conflict yeah. is around that, then you're like, great. Does anyone else have to be white? No. Then I'm going to cast as diversely as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Or, cool, this person has to be male and this person has to be female because their arcs revolve around their gender.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Everybody else, you can be like, okay, I can cast whatever I want and I'm going to put my brain towards casting equitably based on my community and based on my student base.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know a playwright who also puts in their plays at the very beginning, if these are the characters that have to be this way, mm-hmm. these are the characters you should be not casting as white people if you don't have to.
Oh, great.
Which I think is a great, you know, obviously if you have like 90% white students, the majority of your, if you're doing, you know, like Little Mermaid or whatever, right. you know, like right. if you're doing a play that doesn't revolve around race in mm-hmm. some way, like that's going to be how it shakes out because that's reflective of your community.
Yeah.
And also putting your mind, just like thinking about it, just putting the intention there is going to start to make you think differently about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Tessa, this has been like an awesome conversation. It always, I mean, always makes me uncomfortable because I'm still trying to like figure out like how I can do better.
Yeah.
And how I can talk about it better.
Yeah.
And so if anybody else, just, I'm gonna acknowledge, I feel very uncomfortable and like a little like I'm a terrible person. But you're not. I'm not.
Yeah.
None of us are.
Yeah.
We are, just be nice and gentle to yourself. And also I just want to put the disclaimer again too, that with ReTheater, we offer a lot of different opportunities to learn more about this, but it's always in a safe, like loving educational space where
right.
we understand that this is heavy material. And so
safe yeah. and educational and challenging.
Challenging. Because like, you should be challenged, right?
Yeah, you should be okay. held accountable.
Yeah.
And I should be held accountable.
And I should too. Yeah, all
taking
of us.
Care of yourself and also holding yourself accountable can exist in the same space.
And it's so hard, but it can
yeah.
work. It can work, guys.
Totally.
So, awesome. Well, Tessa, thank you so much for joining
yeah.
me. I love having you on these podcasts. But if people are interested in learning more about you,
mm-hmm.
we'll put your information in the show notes as well. Is there anything you want to plug or anything like that?
Sure. If you live in the Seattle area, I also produce a show called She Is Fierce, Stories from the Female and Genderqueer Perspective. That's a nonfiction storytelling show where people who are female or non-binary tell stories from their lives that matter to them. And you also have the opportunity, if you're a storyteller, to collaborate with a professional like musician or dancer or theater maker or
so cool.
Visual artist in the area. We do a show like roughly every 4 to 6 months. And you can find us at She Is Fierce Seattle Stories on all social media platforms. And also, we're about to launch our website, so you'll be able to Google us and find us very readily and instantly.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, great. Yeah, if you're in Seattle area, totally check that out. If you're not, you can just go see how awesome Tessa is at doing all of this by checking our show notes. So, great. Once again, thank you, Tessa.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and thank you, everybody who listened. I hope that this podcast has helped inspire you to just go out and make tiny changes or small changes that can just make the world a better place and the art that you're making more equitable and more accessible, and has inspired you to make art that matters. So until next time, keep on doing what you're doing, and we will see you then. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode. If you enjoyed it, I would love if you would leave us a review or rate us on iTunes or Stitcher, or share us with your friends on social media so that we are able to help spread the word around Flipping the Script and inspire people to make art that matters across the world. As a thank you for taking the time to review us and share us, each month I'm going to be giving away a theater swag gift basket. All that you need to do in order to win is just share us and review us, and every month I'm going to select a review or a share at random, read it on the air, and if it's yours, you will be the lucky winner of this awesome theater swag bag, which is going to have so much stuff in it that's like essential for the theater nerd, no matter if you're a teacher or student or just an enthusiast. If you want to find out more about Re Theater and our programs, our online classes, and our community for educators, just go to www.retheaterco.com. Theater is spelled with an R-E. Or you can follow us on Facebook at Re Theater. If you want to know about the work that I'm up to and find out more about Re Theater, you can follow me on Instagram. I'm there all the time giving out lots of tips and ideas and just sharing about how awesome theater education is. You can follow me at @Lindsay_CuiavaBar. If you have any questions about today's episode or thoughts you'd like to share with us, or maybe you have some topics you'd like to see us cover in the future, I would totally love to hear from you. You can send me an email anytime at lindsay@retheaterco.com. Just make sure you spell Lindsay A-Y, and I look forward to hearing from you. As always, thanks for listening, and keep on making art that matters.